Do you see dead people? Not because you're a Bruce Willis superfan, but because visits with G-Ma got a little weird after her funeral.
Do your friends snap photos of thrift shop finds before buying them to ask you if they're haunted, knowing you'll be able to say yeah or no?
Are you often up at 3 a.m. Googling the various ways in which bodies decompose? But you swear it's just harmless research.
Did you set off the fire alarm at work while saging your cubicle and your boss didn't accept, but the vibes were really bad as a reasonable explanation?
Then this is the podcast for you.
Ooh, but have you died twice and grew up in a cult?
No, that's just you. Is your favorite piece of taxidermy a raccoon named Rancid?
No, that's just you.
Oh.
Welcome to the Identity Podcast. Fucking like missing. I mean, it wouldn't be that much if I was missing the last page, but like, say the second page got gone, then like, we'd just be fucked.
This is true.
What's the smell of the thing?
The smell of the day is sunflower.
Mm.
Yeah.
I had a lip gloss that was flavored sunflower.
Oh.
Yes. And it was like in a square.
Was it pleasant?
No. But it was like this little square. You got it from Claire's.
Yes.
And it had a plastic sunflower in the lip gloss. So I had to use all of the lip gloss to get to the sunflower. But then, because it was like that tacky lip gloss that you like rub your finger on, not like the super like smooth consistency.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Then because of that, it had made the sunflower look a lot bigger than it actually was, because it was like this clear lip gloss over the sunflower. So I go through, I use that for fucking months. Every Sunday for church, my lips were popping. They were glossed. And then I'm like, finally, I get to my treasure at the very bottom. And it's like smaller than a goddamn penny.
Oh.
I was like, but I tried so hard.
Right?
I dealt with this strange flavor and aroma.
That's terrible.
For months.
Talk about anticlimactic.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Anyways, there. Have a tale.
Have a tale or two. Have a tale for free. Well, hi everybody. I am your host, Janine Mercer, and I am joined here by...
the wonderful and marvelous Katie McNally.
McNally?
Yes, I'm McNally today.
Oh, okay.
I've changed. I'm not Macaulay anymore.
Oh.
I'm McNally.
Okay. So what comes with this new person? Should we be aware?
She talks from the top of her voice.
She talks from the top of her voice as opposed to
like the bottom of her voice. She talks from the top of her voice. So when I talk from the top of my voice, I'm a McNally. Thank you very much.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
How you been?
How have I been?
Yes.
I have been fine. I have been doing some gardening. I like gardening. I find it relaxing.
Gardening's awesome. I miss having a garden.
Yeah, you know, you could probably get, like, a little planter or something and put it out by your door and have...
No, not with my depression. It would die, and then I'd feel like everything was dead, and I would cry. I just lost a plant, my little snow bush named Topaz, and I cried.
Oh.
So I'm just going to stick with my snake plant and other...
Because
I don't want to murder them. I mean,
you just need to get something that's a little more drought hardy.
Yeah, like a snake plant.
Yeah, but you can't put that outside, though.
No.
Because that'll die.
Truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. But also, I don't live in a very great area, so if I put, like, a really nice planter outside, there's the chance that then I would come outside and it wouldn't be there anymore.
Yeah, because people are assholes.
Yeah. Although, no one stole my Dollar Tree Christmas wreath.
Well, I mean, it was a Dollar Tree Christmas wreath. People were probably like, what? No.
But they could have, and they didn't.
They absolutely could have.
There's this weird guy who lives, like, two doors down, and every single day when I come back from work, he's sitting outside polishing bicycle tires.
Polishing bicycle tires.
He has...
The tires or the rim?
The rim. But it looks like it's the same tire, and I have, like... looked at it, and this has happened probably, I would say, 8 to 9 times now. I've come home from work, and he's sitting there with his rag, and, like, he has this little tin of something, I don't know, and he just, like, dips the rag in the little tin and just, like, polishes. And I'm like, if that's what brings you fucking joy, I am so happy for you.
I mean, I guess.
But what the fuck?
Does he have a bike?
Yeah, there's no way. I haven't seen a bike.
Oh, it's just...
I've never seen him on a bike. I've just seen the solitary bicycle tire that he polishes.
You know...
Sitting on a stoop.
I mean, I feel like you live in an area that is probably home to at least 2 eclectic people that might do that.
I mean, I'm sure I look really weird because my friend, she had like this negative energy attached to her. So she came to my apartment for me to like cleanse her from Illinois.
Yeah.
So I'm like cleansing her and I didn't want to brush all the negative energy off in my house. So I check that no one's around and I bring her in the backyard with like my all like Wicca-y broom thing. And I'm like brushing her down and then someone just like walks by and I'm like, well, so I'm probably one of the 2 eclectic
people.
Just sweeping
some negative energy away here. Nothing to see. Nothing to see here.
Well, and she was holding an egg.
Oh.
So she just like come back and there's this girl just like standing barefoot in the grass holding an egg while someone else is just like brooming her.
Beating her with a...
No, you never beat someone with the broom. You gently caress in a downward motion. To return the negative energy to the earth.
Is it like a kitchen broom?
No, it's a broom I made.
Oh,
it's a very pretty broom.
It's a basem.
Yes. See, I wasn't going to use that word because I didn't know if you'd know what that word was. So I was sticking with broom.
Girl. I know more than you think.
I believe you.
Yeah.
Anyhow, bicycle tire man. I don't know what he's doing with his life. I wish that it was my life. I wish that's what I did. Like
he's a professional bicycle tire polisher.
But,
and that's what makes his heart sing.
And then that's what matters.
So, I mean...
Like, if that's what makes you... If that's what brings you joy, then that's what you do. You fucking polish.
You polish the shit out of that thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The one singular
polish the fucking chrome off it.
I just, like, the first couple times, I was like, oh, he's putting a bike together. That's cool. But then, like, you hit, like, fucking time 8 and 9, and I'm like...
There's okay. No still. What is going on with that?
Yes, oh, anyhow. Weird. So.
Gardening. I don't think I've had anything weird like that happen this week. I feel like it's been like a pretty chill week. Oh, another thing that I did was I organized a lot of my collectibles.
They're very, very lovely. So organized.
Yeah, I put them in some more glass cases and I got some baseball bat cases and... For those of you who don't know, I'm an avid pop collector, so I have...
A lot of soda everywhere.
It's just fucking soda everywhere. I have, like, 400 and something pieces.
That's it. I didn't know it was that many.
Yeah, it's a few, so...
1 or 2.
One or two, you know. enough to take over a fucking room in a house, so good. But yeah, so I kind of organized everything according to Nightmare Before Christmas and, like, horror movies and all that kind of stuff. So I have, like, 3 pieces that I still have to get for my He-Man collection.
Always makes me think of that one video. And I cry sometimes when I'm lying in bed. You've seen that, right, with the He-Man? You have no idea what I'm talking about.
No. I know the song. You're singing, but I don't know the video.
I will be showing you the He-Man video of it. It's iconic.
We're falling apart. You done fucked up. Technical difficulties. It's okay.
Okay. Anyhow, okay. I'll show you that video.
That sounds good. Yeah, because I was going to say, I've never seen the video. I know the song that you're singing.
Well, if you didn't, that would be odd.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like my armpits smell that. Can you smell them?
I feel like I can.
Shit.
I
have deodorant.
And I was gonna say, I don't have any pit stick that's not used.
Come on.
I don't know how you feel about used pit stick. I do have natural, like Tom's Naturals.
I normally have deodorant. I've had deodorant every single other day, but apparently not today.
Well, it's not making my eyes water, just keep your arms down.
No gesticulation.
Don't, like, like wave your arms around.
It was warm today.
It was warm today, and you're dressed in all fucking black.
It matched my mood when I woke up. I was in mourning for my not being still asleep.
Oh, yeah, loss of sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my dead plant.
Oh, yeah. Topaz. Well, you know, did you pour one out for him?
No, I don't drink.
Well, yeah, but you could pour anything out in the fucking grass.
Oh, I thought that
I mean, literally anything.
Maybe I shall.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be alcohol.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought that was a prerequisite.
Oh, no, no. I think that, pretty much anything. I mean, what did the plant drink? The plant didn't drink fucking alcohol. Pour some fucking water out somewhere and be like, honoring you, Topaz, with this cup of water that I'm dumping out.
Yeah, and then I'll be solidified as one of the weird two people in my apartment building.
I mean,
it's... She was holding an egg. It's kind of set in stone.
Okay, so what do we have this week? What do you have? I don't even remember who went first last time.
You went first last time.
Oh, I went first?
Who's on first? What's on second?
Okay, so what do you have?
Well, for this week, I was going to talk a little bit about sleep paralysis because of my personal experiences of sleep paralysis versus could it be something more?
Hmm. Now, you do realize that I have done a piece about the hag.
Yes.
Okay.
I definitely realized that. For sure, I knew that.
Did you not?
No.
No.
I looked through all the old things to make sure that there wasn't, like, a whole thing on, like, just sleep paralysis.
Yeah.
And then saw that there wasn't and was like, coolio, because I decided the time has come for me to get a bit more into the weird shit that's happened to me. So we're going to talk about sleep paralysis.
Cool.
And then we're going to talk about my favorite subject.
You.
Nice. Yeah.
How about I'm sure you? That eventually it will be everybody's favorite subject.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You will love me. You have no choice.
Oh, God. Okay. This just keeps getting better by the minute. So I have a story that is essentially about one of the worst circus disasters ever.
Was it the Ringling Bros?
No, it was the Hagenbeck Wallace Circus.
That is a mouthful.
In 1918, there was a train accident that killed a bunch of people. And I'm going to talk about Showman's Rest, which is a large plot in a cemetery that's dedicated to circus performers in Chicago.
Interesting.
I'm going to tackle that, and then I think I'm going to mention a little something about something else that happened at a circus that was quite terrible, but because I don't want people to think that it was just like, just this one time that this terrible thing happened at a circus. Like, it happened, yeah.
Precedent.
Yeah. So, that's kind of where I am. So, I went first last time?
I think so.
So, now you go first this time.
Either that, or we're one off the back and forth.
It doesn't matter.
Yes, in the at the end of the day, I don't think anyone truly gives a fuck. Except for Mel Gibson.
I mean, Mel Gibson might.
Yes.
But I don't think he listens. So...
Yet. I don't know if I want to be the kind of podcast Mel Gibson listens to. I say trying to be delicate.
I feel like Mel Gibson listens to podcasts like, you know that scene in Nacho Libre?
No, because I haven't seen that.
Oh, God, you haven't seen it? Were
there,
you
haven't seen the He-Man video, because you're old.
I saw the original fucking He-Man movie, because you're old. So, it's like a scene where this wrestler is getting oiled up by, like, his attendants.
Okay.
And he's like, you know, whatever, I forget what the fuck his name is, but he's like, his eyes are number one. His legs are number one. Yeah.
I feel like I would need to have a lot more context.
As he's like, massaging. Really?
I don't get it.
You've never seen Nacho Libre? I don't...
Wow. I grew up in a cult.
I mean, still, I don't think that's any excuse.
Hey now.
Their friend.
I use that That is, like, the one thing I got out of that experience was the ability to use it as an excuse. Everything else about it sucked. But by God, I got the excuse.
Oh, my. All right. Well, hit us with some sleep paralysis.
Sounds good. Okay. First, we're just going to talk some definitions.
Okay.
So, look, we've actually talked about it when I was, like, in the ER, I think, about sleep paralysis. So I know you have a general understanding of it.
And have experienced it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ooh, wait, no, hold on to that. Savor it. Hold it back. I was going to ask you that later.
Oh, sorry. Okay, well, we'll cut this part out.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So, sleep paralysis is when you're either falling asleep or waking up, a person becomes aware and, like, alert, but they're unable to move or speak. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes during an episode, you will hallucinate, either hear, feel, or see things that are not there, and freak the fuck out. The episodes generally last less than a couple minutes, but it can happen once or all the time. I was lucky enough to have an all-the-time type of sleep paralysis.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lucky you.
Oh, yeah. It's great. But yeah, so basically you're laying in bed, you were asleep, you're starting to wake up, and like you're alert and aware and like your eyes are open. Mm-hmm. But when you're in a certain cycle of sleep, your body shuts down your movements because otherwise you're going to dream about climbing a bridge and you're going to try and climb it.
Right,
so
exactly.
There's just a momentary disconnect between your brain being aware and like your body also coming into that awareness, and in it you just kind of freak the fuck out because you're like, hey, I'm awake, why the fuck can't I move anything? And it's quite terrifying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just absolutely terrifying. It occurs in people who are otherwise healthy, people with narcolepsy, and can run in families as a result of specific genetic predispositions.
Hmm.
Which, yay!
Right.
The condition, it can be triggered by a whole bunch of crap, like sleep deprivation, stress, and abnormal sleep cycles. Hmm. But actually, there's not been too much research done into, like, sleep paralysis. Like, people, I think they focus on ones that are far more detrimental to people.
Yeah.
Like apnea, crap like that.
Yeah.
But diagnosis is pretty much based on someone saying, hey, this happened to me, and then being like, ha ha ha, I can tell you what that there is. Yeah, but treatment options have been poorly studied. It's recommended that people just, you reassure them that, hey, this is normal, and it's not normally a serious thing, and to recommend, like, that they just try and get less stressed.
Sure.
Which is what I was told. Hey, you're very stressed. It is causing you to think you see demons. The way to deal with this is to just not be stressed anymore.
Right. I mean, but that's easier said than done. I mean, you can't just turn that off.
No, no. But yeah, that's the advice that I was given. Some CBT, like cognitive behavioral therapy, can be effective. I don't know if you or listeners have seen The Haunting of Hill House.
I think I've seen parts of it.
But in it, there is a character, Nell, I believe her name is, who has sleep paralysis issues, and they come up with a strategy for her to help her feel more in control as she is dealing with the ramifications of it, like to like things to think and work through until you're fully in control of your body again.
Right.
So, and in extreme cases where it's super detrimental, antidepressants have been used in the past to try and help.
Yeah.
Just adjust, see if it's a chemical thing, some of the chemicals.
Yep.
So, now this statistic was quoted multiple times, but given its vast, because between 8% and 50% of people experience sleep paralysis at some time. So, I was like, that's not a great statistic.
Yeah, that's kind of a large...
Yeah, that's like 42% difference.
Uh-huh.
So yeah. I will admit that I looked to see if I could find more information about it, but I didn't super look. I was just like, I will admit that. Like, I did, because I was like,
right,
there has to be something to back this up, especially considering three of the articles I looked at had that exact statistic. First of all, why are all three of you using such a vague, and my inner psychology student who had to take research methods and advanced statistics was very upset by between 8 and 50%.
I bet that made you a little itchy. Yeah.
Just, we'll leave it at that. Just, I twitched a little.
Yeah.
Especially, and I was like, and sources. Sources. So, sources? Tell me, why is it? Anyhow.
Yeah, no, you get nothing.
No. It's just, there's a 42% variation. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
One of them.
So, do you think that the reason for that variation is that sleep paralysis is such a vague condition that they can't really pin it down?
My assumption would be is that someone came up with a way in which to find, like, the exact percentage of people that did it. And as their study was replicated, the results varied more and more. So, therefore, the statistical difference between study to study varied a lot more.
Right.
But also, yeah, it could be generalized terminology. It could just be that this particular way of looking at it is not that effective, and someone should be looking at it through a different lens, like different variables, and so on and so forth, a different way of measuring,
right,
blah 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 blah. I could trail off.
Right. Did they get into like diet at all?
Yes. They
or like where people were living when they experienced it, or
you'll have to see.
Oh, we're gonna get there. It's coming. Okay.
But about 5% of people, and this one, isn't that a wonderful percentage? 5%.
That's a better percentage than
8 to 50.
Uh-huh.
5% of people who experience, like, sleep paralysis at least once have regular episodes.
Hmm.
So it's a much smaller percentage, because a regular episode is one that occurs, like, multiple times, like, within a year, et cetera. Because someone can have recurring episodes without them being regular. Like, you can have it when you were 5, and then not again until you're 26, so it's recurring. But that's not, like, a regular type of situation. But males and females are affected equally. And it is believed that sleep paralysis played a role throughout history in the creation of stories about alien abductions and other paranormal events.
I mean, I guess I can understand how maybe alien abduction could be mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
If you're having this weird episode where your body is completely immobile and then...
But you have to remember also the hallucinations. People often see, like, a dark shadow or something of that sort.
Right.
So, I will get to it later, but I've had a couple experiences where I'm not sure. Was it just sleep paralysis?
Mm.
Was it, like, actual demons?
Mm.
I mean, because I do believe in demons. We know this. Mm-hmm. You know this. It is known.
Yeah. Right.
But, not sure. But, yeah, the main symptom of it is just being able to move your body while you're physically awake and conscious. Imagine sounds often happen, like humming, hissing, static, zapping, and buzzing. But it can vary from there and get a lot more scary, with things like voices, whispers, and roars being heard. The symptoms are usually accompanied by intense emotions like fear and panic. Because if you're laying there and you can't move, and then you're hearing someone like roar and like moan and whisper, like, you're gonna be a little fucking stressed out.
It's a little horrifying.
Yes, people have also had sensations of being dragged out of bed or flying, numbness, and feelings of electric tingles or vibrations running through their body.
Oh, weird.
Yes.
So, like, that quote-unquote dream you have where you're falling?
Yeah, well, that dream is different. That you're not conscious during that. Do you know what I mean? Hmm. Like, sleep paralysis is you are awake, your eyes are open. But, like, if you're just dreaming about falling, like, your eyes are shut and you're not, like, really awake and cognizant at the time. But you could be awake and kind of aware and then feel like you're falling. It just wouldn't be the same as, like, having that be a dream that you're having. Sleep paralysis includes hallucinations oftentimes, such as a supernatural creature suffocating or terrifying the individual, which is often accompanied by a feeling of pressure on your chest.
Yep.
And difficulty breathing. And like I said, another example would be like the menacing shadowy figure entering a room or lurking outside a window or like standing in a doorway. Mm-hmm. That's very common. The content and interpretation of the hallucinations are driven by fear, somatic sensations, and REM-induced arousal. Like, that's what contributes to how strong a visceral reaction you have to them. It's all those different factors combining. So basically, this is what I was saying. Like, REM sleep and somatic symptoms, coupled with the awareness that one is paralyzed, generates a variety of psychological symptoms during sleep paralysis. Because you're just, your brain's trapped in that in-between stage. You're not awake, right. You're not asleep. Everything fucking sucks. So it can activate a flight-fight reaction and panic-like arousal. So therefore, you wake up, you can't move. Your body starts to freak the fuck out. You try and engage in fight or flight, but you can't do either.
Right.
So this exacerbates your symptoms and makes you, like, completely fucking lose your shit. Because, and then it just, like, snowballs from there. Because you wake up, you can't move, you're freaking out. Then your body's freaking out. And then you're freaking out because your body's freaking out, but you can't actually freak out. And it's just, like, a whole freak fest.
Right. It is Le Freak, but not...
Yeah.
Say Chic.
Yes.
It took you a minute.
It did. But an interesting thing is that sleep paralysis actually is cross-cultural and has been recorded through history way, 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 way back in the day. The term was first used by British neurologist S.A.K. Wilson in 1928 in his dissertation called The Narcolepsies. That's the first time they called it sleep paralysis. But there is paintings and art and folk tales going back quite a long ways, including things like the hag and like incubus and succubus that prey on people like while they're sleeping and you can't move. That just go back really, really far through history. But yeah, the hypervigilant response, it can lead to the creation of stimuli that contribute to the threat. So... I'm trying to figure out how to explain that in words.
So, I mean, it sounds kind of technical.
Yes. I forget sometimes, like, that when I read that, I'm like, oh, aha, because I studied that specific term and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, like I said, it snowballs, and what you're feeling makes what you're feeling be worse. And because it's the brain, and the brain's all fucky, if your brain starts to freak out about something, sometimes it needs something to actually be freaking out about, which is why you can see like a shadowy feature or something, because your brain is freaking out, but it needs something to put that on. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. And although the core features of sleep paralysis appear to be universal, the ways in which they're experienced vary vastly. Like, it seems to be a very cultural thing, like the type of sleep paralysis that you experience, based on... Like, over 100 terms have been identified to use to describe that experience of being awake but unable to move. Some scientists, like I said a bit earlier, have proposed that sleep paralysis is the scientific explanation for a lot of paranormal and alien-related experiences.
Right.
For example, alien visits, demonic possession, alien abduction experiences, the night hag, and shadow people have all been... See, now here's the thing. I like this, but also I think that's just mighty convenient. That, oh, this one thing that happens to a lot of people, which covers all of these things, you know? That just, to me, well, who's had, like, paranormal things happen.
Right.
That... seems just convenient that, well, we can put all of the stuff that you've experienced under this one blanket term. And, yes, sure, we haven't studied this blanket term. And we haven't thought of ways to fix it. But we can tell that everything that you're dealing with relates back to this exact thing. And while I'm sure that gives some people comfort to be like, this is sleep paralysis, a lot of times, sure, man. Fucking sure, that's what it is. I just find that I don't think it encompasses all of the variations of human experience to the degree to which scientists right. are trying to say that mm-hmm. it does.
But I mean, the term paranormal,
yeah,
that's a big umbrella too.
It's true.
It could just be this wide sweeping generalization for something that we don't understand, which is fine. I certainly wish that they were doing more to explore sleep paralysis so that mm-hmm. we could figure out exactly how it's created and, you know, what we can do to make it stop.
Because it's terrifying. In some cultures, it isn't feared to, like, be, like, awake and unable to move. People view it sure. as a way that their ancestors are trying to connect with them or their higher self. Mm-hmm. So it is extremely cultural, because in cultures where, like, it's like, oh no, this is horrible, this is a terrible thing, oh no, whatever, those cultures do have a much higher fear response to it, which in turn then causes you to have sleep paralysis more because you're more stressed out about having it. And since right. stress isn't, like, indicative of you getting mm-hmm. it, like, boop, 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 boop,
boop, it's just boop. A vicious cycle.
Okay. So now I wanted to ask, have you ever experienced sleep paralysis?
I mean, of course I have, because
eight to 50% of people have.
I mean, you know, in terms of wide sweeping generalizations and fucked up statistics, yeah, absolutely I have. The most recent experience that I had was probably 6 months ago, and I'm one of those people that has intermittent. Mm-hmm. Doesn't happen to me all the time, doesn't happen
recurring,
every night.
But not regular.
Right, exactly. So, I was lying in bed, and I was lying on my left side, and I sleep in kind of an odd way because I have a back injury.
Mm-hmm.
So, for some reason, sleeping on my side with my leg kind of, like, sticking off at an angle helps with the pressure on my back.
Okay.
So I was kind of lying so that my head was facing, we have a window mm-hmm. at the bottom of our, at the foot of our bed. And I don't know what time it was. I'd gotten up and come back to bed, and then I thought I had quote unquote fallen asleep. But apparently that was not the case. And there was like this strange blue light
mm-hmm.
and it was... Well, it wasn't really blue. I guess it was kind of like a gray blue.
Mm-hmm.
But it was one of those... It was almost like it had texture.
Interesting.
It was very strange. And then it looked like the window was open and the wind was blowing the curtains, like, out. Like, the curtains were billowing. And there was this weird grayish blue light.
Eh.
And then eventually that stopped and I felt like somebody was watching me. And then I heard this, like, really weird buzzing noise. And I remember thinking to myself, what the hell is that buzzing noise? Where is that coming from? Like, it made no sense. And then I just snapped out of it.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, but it was very strange. It was almost like the light had texture. Like, it was grainy.
Mm-hmm.
It was very strange.
That's interesting.
And it's not the first time that something like that has happened.
Yeah.
They're, like, the other times that I've experienced it, it's been somewhat similar. Sometimes there's a person in the room.
Yeah.
The one time that it happened to me when I was, like, in my teens, it was my great-grandmother, because she had just passed away. So I just saw it as her coming to visit me to tell me that she was okay.
Yeah.
But I think perhaps it was more likely a paralysis episode.
What I wonder... is in sleep paralysis, since the line between being awake and not being awake mm-hmm. is, like, you're riding it,
mm-hmm.
is it possible for, like, relatives or
mm.
other entities or something
spirits
to use
and
that
energies. Yeah.
as a way to then communicate with you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe it was your grandma. Maybe it was a combo platter. Like, it was sleep paralysis
right.
and she was like, hey, man.
Right.
Yeah, see
you're kind of sensitive right now. Let
yeah.
me, you know, because
me,
I know you'll be able to
yeah.
see me.
Let me use this moment that I was given.
Yeah.
I've had so many freaking episodes of sleep paralysis. It's actually gotten to the point where I'm not scared during it. I'm annoyed because it's happening again. Thankfully, since I got rid of like really toxic people in my life and I graduated college, so my stress really went down.
Yep.
I haven't had any experiences, I'd say, within like the past year. The last one I recall, no, that's not true, because I haven't been at my apartment for a year yet. The last one was soon after I moved into my apartment. Just, because for me, it doesn't happen as much when I'm falling asleep. It's when I'm starting to wake up, especially in the middle of the night. Like, say I'm having a dream, and then I realize I have to pee, so I have to wake myself up so I can go use the bathroom.
Yep.
So I'll get stuck in between, like, that, and I won't be able to move.
So it's like being in a limbo, almost.
Yes, and it's so annoying, because I have to pee.
Well, I mean... And I mean, if it goes on for too long, it ain't gonna wait.
Yeah.
Maybe you should invest in some plastic sheeting. No?
Okay. No, I'll do that more if it becomes apparent that there's a need. Just because I am hopeful of having someone over to my apartment at some point in my life. And I think that if I had plastic sheeting, that
that might turn somebody off, yeah.
Uh-huh. Or turn them on in a way that is not the direction I wanted to go in.
Yeah.
So, anyhow, like, I remember being in that and looking, and like I said, I've had it so many times that I know a lot of people, you feel intense fear, but because I used to have it, like, happen even multiple times in one night, so it literally got to the point where I was very easily able to identify when I was in sleep paralysis. So therefore, the way that I trained my own brain to deal with it was to take that fear and just make it be annoyance. Because it's so much easier to deal with a shadow figure standing between you and the bathroom you want to go to if you're just like, Jesus Christ, Harold, again.
Like, right.
That's a much more... It's a much better experience if it happens on a regular basis as opposed to always being freaked out like, oh no, it's the being. Like, if you name it Harold and, like, you're just like, again, bro, I just saw you last night. Come on.
Right.
What the fuck? That makes it very different. Hmm. So I've had, like I said, a lot of experiences with sleep paralysis. The first one freaked me the fuck out because I had no clue what was happening. I definitely had, like, the pressure on my chest. And because when I was young, I still had all my diseases and stuff, I thought something was wrong with my heart. Because I woke up and I couldn't move and I felt like something was pressing in my chest. And then when I opened my eyes, I had a bunk bed and I could see the top bunk and I felt like I saw this face like between me and the bunk just like looking at me and snarling. And I was like, what the fuck? And I freaked the fuck out, except you can't actually.
Uh-huh.
So I actually Googled it then because I was like, Okay. And I couldn't tell my parents because they would have just said, like, there's a demon and then exorcised me blessed all the corners of my room and shit.
Right.
So I just had to figure it out on my own. Which, mind you, has happened to me. Side note.
Oh, exorcism? I have been
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Well, not so much an exorcism because they weren't sure, but I've been anointed with oil and prayed over, like the wise woman lady who you knew came to our house and was all praying over me. And then they went in my room and they like cleansed my room and like called in the sacred power of Jesus and some blah, 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 blah. Basically, my mom called me upstairs because she wanted me to say hi to this lady, and then all of a sudden they're putting oil on my forehead, and I was like, okay, this is happening. Fine.
Wowzers. Okay.
Okay.
It's kind of intense. But...
So there was another time, I know, let's just gloss over it.
Well, you know, bury it and walk away.
Yeah. No. Don't bury those things because then they become repressed memories and they pop up in the middle of your, like, science lecture that you're going to at college, and all of a sudden you're not at college anymore. You're 14 years old, and it's just bad.
Wow, and this has never happened to you before, right? No, never ever.
No.
Jesus. Okay.
Bio 102A. Tuesday, Thursdays, 8:30 to 10.
Jesus.
But yeah, just don't bury them. Just like what I like to do is put them in a box and put a lid on them. That way, when you're ready, you can take the lid off and look at what's in the box. It's much less, like, final and repressed than burying it.
Right.
But then you'd eventually end up with a whole bunch of boxes, and that becomes its own thing. But, like, if you have to, go for a box, not for burying. Mm. It's advice from Katie McCauley. Okay. Anyhow. Moving on. Tangent. When I was 15 years old, I had a cousin. She was a year younger than I was, and we both were really able to feel spirit things around us. And one night, we were on my bunk bed, and how my bunk bed was set up was that it was where our feet were facing where my door was. Okay. And on the back of my door, I had a mirror. Which, and you know how I am about mirrors.
Yeah, you're not fond.
No, this is one of the reasons why, this story.
Okay.
So, I'm on the top bunk, and she is on the bottom bunk. And we're, like, trying to go to sleep, but, you know, like, not really, like, who can be the quietest starting now? Shit like that. I don't know if you ever did that, but, like, it's a whole thing.
No.
Like, or, it's a whole thing. Anyhow, because...
Who can go 10 whole minutes without laughing?
Yeah.
Not me.
I always won.
Oh, really?
You can take that to the bank.
Oh, nice.
Well, just because I'm very competitive.
Yeah, well.
Anyhow, so I'm on the top bunk and I'm laying there and I'm trying to go to sleep. And I look and I swear to fucking whatever you want me to swear to, even if it's Mel Gibson.
I swear to Mel Gibson.
That I looked in the mirror and there was a man.
Was it Mel Gibson?
That man.
Anyway.
But I saw a man in this dark coat, and you couldn't see his face very clearly, but he was wearing, like, this cap that kind of, like, it's the one that's not a fedora, but similar.
Like a pork pie?
I don't know, but sure, why not?
I mean, like, a pork pie hat kind of looks like a fedora, but the edges are thinner around, and they kind of curl up a little bit. You can wear them flat, too, but they kind of curl up a little bit.
Okay, so it was a dude in a hat.
Sounds good.
And I see this dude in the hat, and I find that I can't move. So I'm all like, shit, sleep paralysis. This is weird, because I wasn't falling asleep really yet, or waking up.
Mm-hmm.
But this is fine. But then all of a sudden, I hear my cousin go, and turns out both of us saw the man in the mirror with the hat and the dark coat, which makes it a lot less likely that it was sleep paralysis.
Yeah.
So we both kind of freaked out. First of all, though, I even as a youth, I had a scientific mind. So,
I'm sure.
So, to be certain that we had both seen the same thing, I wrote down what I remembered seeing and then made her tell me what she saw to make sure that they matched up. Because, you know, you don't want one person to be like, oh, I saw a man in a hat, and the other person to be like, oh my God, me too. I was like, no.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're going to do this methodically.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we weren't in the room at the time. We were in the living room because, like, the room was fucking freaking us out because there was a man in the mirror.
Right.
And he had a very negative energy. And I couldn't move until I heard that my cousin was upset. This will become a common theme in all my experiences, is that when someone I truly love and care for was upset, it snaps me out of it. And I'm like, oh, fuck no, you ain't messing with my like, peeps.
Right.
That's the whole thing for me.
Mm.
But, yeah, so... But then it turned out that we both had seen the same thing.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah. So I don't think then that was sleep paralysis. Because we both saw the same thing. However, it was at night. I was attempting to fall asleep, and I couldn't move, and I saw a shape. So that's the thing. Like, some of my experiences, I'm not sure, because they have... elements, which is why I'm wondering if maybe those things cross over.
Right.
And, like, they intermingle, or if the term in general is applied to more than what it actually should be.
Right. I mean, it's certainly reasonable to assume that they're connected somehow.
Yeah.
In some of the experiences that I've had, I've not only seen my great-grandmother, I've seen my Uncle Bill, who, he was redoing his roof and he fell off and he broke his neck, but he didn't die right away. He was on life support for a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an organ donor. So then, of course, you know, they took his organs or whatever and removed him from life support. But I've seen him. I've seen my Uncle Willie, who had severe dementia and was in a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen him, like, sitting in the corner of my room, like, smiling at me. So, I mean, I've seen people who have passed away while experiencing this form of paralysis. So I wonder if there's not a connection there. It seems really reasonable to me.
I agree. But, yeah, also, though, she saw it, too. So I'm not nuts, because she saw it, too.
Right, yeah.
It was not just me, and I did, like, the most scientific thing, like, a freaked-out 15-year-old could come up with in the moment.
Right. I think it's entirely plausible that there is a veil, and we live on one side of it, and
abysses of darkness.
Whoever is the other, whatever that other might be, you know, other beings or other spirits or what have you, might live on the other side of that veil. I have always felt like we live very close to the loved ones that we've lost. Like, I mean, I've also had, you know, dreams about my Uncle Willie that have been very disturbing. Because he literally, I mean, at the end of his life, he couldn't move.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't eat on his own. He had zero function. And he just sat in the dark in a room in front of a TV that was blaring Bonanza like 24 hours a day. I don't even think the man slept. He just sat there in this room. And so all you could see was his silhouette in this pitch black room. Because my Aunt Phil always kept the windows, the blinds, shut. Just, like, I can still see the silhouette of him sitting in his wheelchair. Just kind of slumped over to one side and the fucking Bonanza theme song blasting. And it's fucking horrifying. It's fucking horrifying.
That would be.
For a kid who's like 6 or 7 years old.
Yeah, that'd be terrifying.
And then you go over, she goes over, my grandmother goes over to visit her sister. Because that's what you do. And she's like, yeah, Janine, why don't you go into the TV room there and watch some TV with Uncle Willie? I'm sure he'd like that. And I'd be like, yeah, but I wouldn't like that. I would not enjoy that experience. I would rather go and play with the poodle that tries to bite me a lot. I don't want to be trapped there. And I think part of it is the fact that I was young and I didn't understand the illness that he was going through.
Yeah.
And the other part of it was just, fucking creepy.
That is creepy. That's really creepy. That's like a horror movie.
Bonanza. And I just, wow. Even now, when I hear that theme song, I'm like, nope, got to turn it off. Can't.
Which is fair. If that had happened to me, I'm done.
I'm like, you know what? Peace out. You want to watch what? Bonanza? Bye.
Yeah, I'd love to hear any of our listeners' theories about it. Like, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
I would be fascinated to hear more about, like, if you've had experiences with sleep paralysis or things that you think people might call sleep paralysis, but you think, nah, bitch,
it's
more.
So, yeah, if you guys want to send us your personal experiences, you can send those to hauntheadscast@gmail.com. So, like I said, I have a piece here about the Hagenbeck Wallace Circus. I called it Big Tops and Sawdust Rings. I don't know. I have a lot of love for the circus simply because a lot of my childhood memories are cemented in going to the circus and seeing the animals and the lion tamers.
I've never been.
You've never been? Where I grew up, there was no option to go to a zoo.
Mm-hmm.
So the only chance, and this was the case for a lot of people who attended the circus in the 1900s, in these small towns that the circus trains and, you know, the parades and stuff would roll through, these people would never have seen a giraffe or an elephant or a tiger or a lion. So for these people to be able to experience that, that was life-changing for them.
Yeah. Shows you that the world is bigger.
Right. And it was absolutely life-changing for me because I learned that giraffes and elephants and zebras and, you know, all of these things existed outside of the world that I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the beauty of the circus, There's also an ugly side to the circus. There absolutely is. There's been a lot of mistreatment of animals and whatever. I can honestly say that I come down on the side of being very depressed that my niece and nephew will never get to experience that circus.
Mm-hmm.
Because the circus now is very different. It's primarily, like, performance-driven, which is fine, but something is lost, I think, in that translation. But yeah, I mean, it was very powerful for me to be able to go and sit in the big top, and granted, the clowns were not... It wasn't real big. I have a little bit of chlorophobia because of a clown.
A clown, like a specific clown?
A specific clown.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a clown. It was a... I think the third time that my father had taken me to the circus, and he bought me a candied apple and some candied popcorn and some cotton candy.
All the sugar.
And soda, too, I think. And he was under the assumption that he would give all of that to a 7-year-old, and that 7-year-old would be totally fine and keep it down. And no. So I threw it up everywhere. And he was trying to clean me up, and something, that part is kind of fuzzy, but something happened with the clown. There was a clown there, the clown said something, or the clown tried to, like, because I was crying, so the clown tried to do something, and it freaked me the fuck out.
Yeah.
And now I don't do clowns. I also don't do frogs, but not because I threw up by a frog, and there was that didn't happen. But the clown thing, totally. So yeah, I do have a lot of love for it, and I think it's really unfortunate that it doesn't really exist anymore. I have a poster in my room here of the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus that I found at an antique mall, and I feel like that's really all that's left of what the circus used to be, is, you know, all of these artifacts that are just kind of around. So I saw that, and I was like, I remember seeing that at, there was a grocery store in Newfoundland called Big Goods. And it was family owned by the Bidgood family. And they would always have, like, promotional things. So they had, like, a little cork board in the entryway. And there was a poster like that with all of these little tickets hanging off it. And you got, like, free admission if you were under a certain age.
Cool.
So my dad would go in and grab, like, 2 or 3. And then he'd take me and a couple of my friends to the circus. And it was, like, a big thing. It was a thing that you did on the weekends for entertainment. Because the only other option was... going to the mall
or
going
paint dry.
To a movie or watching paint dry. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is not all that fun.
Mm-mm.
Amazingly enough. Yeah.
Shocking.
You would think. And back then it was lead paint. You would think that it would be a lot more exciting.
Maybe what if you were like licking it.
Yeah. But, you know, if you weren't nibbling it, it just didn't do so much for you. This piece is called Big Tops and Sawdust Rings. The Hagenbeck Wallace Circus actually began as the Carl Hagenbeck Circus. It was that way from 1844 to around 1913. And Hagenbeck was an animal trainer who pioneered the use of reward-based animal training versus fear-based training. So a lot of the lion tamers of the time would use whips, and they would whip the animals into submission so that they would perform and stand on their hind legs and do little dances and shit. And that was a thing. But Hagenbeck was very much into... if you do this, you get a piece of meat. Or if you do this, you get this other thing. You know, so it wasn't all about the physical harm to the animal. It was all about getting the animal to perform of its own accord.
Okay.
Which is really, I mean, I liked that
about
the circuses that I've seen. Benjamin Wallace was a livery stable owner from Peru, Indiana. He created the Great Wallace Show with his business partner, James Anderson. And then Anderson was bought out in 1890, and Wallace changed the name to the B.E. Wallace Circus. Wallace purchased the Carl Hagenbeck Circus in 1907, and then he merged the two, creating the Hagenbeck-Wallace Circus. Hagenbeck apparently wasn't too keen on the use of his name, and he protested it, but he lost a court battle.
Oh, shit.
So he had no choice. He had to let them use it. In March of 1913... during the Great Flood, apparently this was a thing, the Great Flood, the circus lost a large number of its animals, including 8 elephants, 21 lions, tigers, 8 performing horses.
Oh my.
But this wouldn't be the only tragedy to strike the Hagenbeck Wallace Circus. There have been numerous other tragedies that have struck various circuses. throughout the years, and I'll talk a little bit about one that happened in Hartford in, I believe it was 1944, a little bit later, just to kind of put it in perspective, because this way of life was not easy. Being a circus performer was not easy. You were on the road all the time. Oftentimes your family traveled with you. You had roustabouts that would come on at one stop and leave at another. So, I mean, there were a lot of people that were just, they were just faceless people.
Yeah, who helped, transient.
Yeah, I mean, they helped to put up the circus tent, and then the next stop, they were gone. There was a lot of abuse of not only animals, but performers, because you had freak shows and the sideshow, which was literally, do you know why they call it the sideshow?
No.
Because the big show is in the big top. And the sideshow was always off to the side of the big top. So they literally, it was literally the show on the side. It was the sideshow. So you would go in and you'd go to the sideshow and you'd see like the two-headed snake and like all this kind of weird shit and the Feed You Mermaid. And then once you were all amped up about it, they'd be like, oh, but you got to go see the Flying Willenda Brothers in the big top. Mm. And then everybody would be like, oh, we got to go see that. So then they'd leave the sideshow and go in and take a seat in the big top. So it was really a means of selling more tickets.
Yeah.
And it was maybe like a nickel to go in and see the sideshow. But then they'd fleece you again once you got to the big top.
Yeah.
So it was a money-making scheme. Let's go back here to June 22nd, 1918. Alonzo Sargent had been an engineer for over 16 years and had been charged with transporting troops for the war effort, because this was World War I, the Great War. Sargent worked for the Michigan Central Railroad, and his cargo consisted of 20 empty Pullman cars. Pullman cars were essentially like troop trains.
Okay.
So the troops would sit in the Pullman cars, and then they'd be transported to wherever they needed to go in order to take a boat to wherever else they needed to go.
Mm-hmm.
He had slept very little prior to undertaking this particular trip, and the mix of rich food that he had ingested and the medication that he had taken had made him quite drowsy.
Oh, shit.
So, yeah. So, it's not going to get better. So, at approximately 4 a.m., he missed two automatic signals, at least two, and warnings posted by the brakeman of the 26-car circus train of the Hagenbeck Wallace Circus, which had made an emergency stop to check the hot box on one of its flat cars. By this time, the gentle rocking of the locomotive had put Sargent to sleep.
Oh, shit.
So he didn't see any of the warnings. His train plowed into the caboose and four rear sleeper cars of the Hagenbeck Wallace Circus at a rail crossing known as Ivanhoe Interlocking at roughly 35 miles per hour.
Fuck.
So pretty fast.
Yeah, that's not good.
Pretty fast. 127 people were injured and 86 died. Apparently, they died fairly quickly because the cars that they were sleeping in were made entirely out of wood. So when the one train hit the other train, apparently there were some lanterns that were knocked loose and everything just went up. There's a quote here from a Michigan newspaper. It says, quote, "The flagman waved a lit flare at the speeding train now bearing down, but it was approaching too fast. His own train, the Hagenbeck Wallace circus train, had stopped on the Michigan Central line. Engineers were cooling an overhead axle box. It was 4 a.m. on June 22, 1918, just outside of Hammond, Indiana. The circus train had left Michigan City hours before and was headed to Hammond for a show. The train behind it, a 21-car military troop transport, had left Michigan City about an hour later. It barreled forward now. According to testimony, the engineer passed two yellow signals of caution, two red signals, and in addition, the flagman had left a flare of warning on the tracks about a mile behind the stopped circus train, and Sargent passed that too. Before the trains collided, and this is from Wikipedia, the circus flagman testified that in a last desperate attempt at getting the attention of the sleeping engineer, he actually threw the flare that he was holding at the front window of the hurtling locomotive. And it did nothing.
Shit!
So this dude was out.
He must have felt so goddamn horrible.
He was sawing some logs. He was not waking
up. I mean, like, afterwards. He must have felt... horrendous. Because this is, like, there's no...
I mean, if he's human and is not a sociopath, then
well, there's, like, no doubt to culpability. Right. So...
Yeah.
That's, like, fully your fucking fault, dude.
The human cargo of the circus train the sergeant was following, by all reports a little too closely, consisted of roustabouts who were charged with setting up the circus tents, the games, those kinds of attractions. There were clowns and trapeze artists. Among the passengers were Arthur Derricks and Max Knightsborn of the great Derricks Brothers, a strongman act, and Jenny Ward Todd of the Flying Wards. Kerosene lanterns that hung inside the sleeper cars were knocked from their resting places, and the wooden cars burst into flames. Those who managed to escape the fire desperately tried to help other people who were still trapped inside the wreckage. The Interstate Commerce Commission investigated the crash, and they concluded that the accident was absolutely caused by engine man sergeant being asleep. And from this cause, failing to observe the stop indication of automatic signal and the warnings of the flagman of the circus train and to be governed by them. So in court, the only thing that Sergeant had to say or could say was, quote, "I must have been dozing."
That angers me.
Yeah, you must have been.
Just a little.
Wow.
He threw a fucking flare at your fucking window.
And then there was talk of the engine, the steam from the engine obscuring the signals that he was supposed to.
All four of them.
Yeah, all four of them. And that fucking flare that the dude threw at the window. I mean, shit. Those lost in this horrific accident, one of the worst train accidents in history, are buried in a section of Woodlawn Cemetery at the intersection of Cermak Road and DePlains Avenue in Forest Park, Illinois. The land had been purchased by the Showman's League of America only a few months prior. So literally a few months prior, if this had happened, they wouldn't have had this spot where they could create the memorial.
Shitballs.
They created a mass grave, which is known as Showman's Rest. 5 days after the accident, the bodies of those lost, most were burned beyond recognition, they couldn't identify them, were buried there. Many gravestones read unknown male number 19, unknown female number 43, and four horse driver. Other graves have only the names that the performers went by during their acts, as their circus family only knew them by these names. So there's one that says Smiley, and there's another one that says Baldy. Those are, you know, could very well be two roustabouts that were buried there because they'd hopped on the train only a few stops prior.
Yeah.
And they were going to set up in Hammond and, you know, had this terrible accident. Joe Coyle, a clown, was seen weeping beside the bodies of his wife and child who had only just come to visit him. Coyle had been thrown free of the wreckage, but his family had been trapped beneath it. The Indy Star wrote in June of 2018, quote, "A history website called Region Rambler reports that in 1922, he managed a vaudeville show called George White's Scandals." Apparently the Three Stooges got their start right there. And then Coyle later returned to clowning under the name Coco the Clown, working mostly in the Chicago area. And he worked as a clown into the mid-1950s at children's parties and retail stores. So he did manage to get on with his life. I'm sure it was very difficult for him. There's a lot of information out there that says that he traveled around and he wore rags and he played the part of a sad clown for the rest of his life. That line, I believe, is in a documentary. But Joe Coyle, actually, I mean, he went on to do other things and tried to go on as best he could.
Which is better than...
I mean, yeah. You know?
That's just such a horrible situation.
Mm-hmm. So this tragedy only caused two cancellations. They had so many people pass away, 86 people passed away, and it caused only two cancellations. Circuses around the country lent performers to the Hagenbeck Wallace Circus, And within one day of the disaster, the circus was performing its scheduled show in Wisconsin.
Fuck.
So the show must go on. Sargent was arrested and charged with manslaughter. But despite being found responsible for the deaths of 86 people, because he'd fallen asleep on the job, he was acquitted. So he was never actually charged with anything.
That bothers me.
Yeah. I'm sure it bothers a lot of people. If you're keen, there are some original circus wagons from the Hagenbeck Wallace Circus. You can go to Baraboo, Wisconsin, and go to Circus World and see them. Now, I can't leave you without mentioning a little haunted tidbit about Showman's Rest. Because this is, after all, a podcast that deals with haunted shit.
Yes.
And haunted places.
Yes.
On occasion. And there's even a little urban legend in this story for good measure. In Chicago, many a child on the schoolyard has heard the tale of the Hagenbeck Wallace Circus and the terrible loss of life. That's what really happened. Now, the story goes on to tell of the five elephants that perished in the crash. Apparently, according to some kids on the playground, not the most reliable source, the elephants were too big to move very far, and so the five statues that guard Showman's Rest are actually grave markers for these five elephants. It's said, again, according to kids on the playground, that if you visit the cemetery around the time of the accident at about 4 a.m., you can hear the phantom cries of the elephants who lost their lives. Now, I know what you're thinking. The Brookfield Zoo is close by. It's just the trumpeting of living elephants at the zoo. That might be true if the zoo hadn't lost its last elephant in 2010.
Dun, dun, dun. Plot twist.
So, are there elephants buried under the statues? Nope. They're just statues. Other rumors include mercy killings of those trapped in the wreckage, preferring to be killed than experience being burned alive. This is also untrue. Now, the cemetery itself is super creepy. I wandered onto hauntedplaces.org, and I found several accounts of hearing strange sounds and voices in the cemetery late at night. Some mentioned a feeling of unease or being watched. Others said it was just spooky. I mean, it is a cemetery where dead clowns are buried, and live clowns are scary enough. On frightfind.com, there were a few stories about paranormal happenings. An Oak Park police officer reported that the ground beneath him began to vibrate as if elephants were running by. Laughter and circus music can be heard at odd hours. Many paranormal seekers have investigated the spot over the years and all have experienced drains on their equipment or the equipment being inexplicably jammed, non-functioning, or unusable when it was fully operational prior to entering the cemetery. The activity at Showman's Rest is interesting, especially when you take into account that the site of the accident is well over 40 miles away. So you would think that the actual site would have more paranormal happenings.
Yeah, you would.
But apparently that's not the case. It's all happening at the cemetery. According to paranormal historian and investigator Bob... God, I'm going to bastardize his last name. Sorry, Bob. Trzeciak, I think that's... T-R-Z-E-C-I-A-K.
Trzeciak.
I mean, it sounds like the sound you make when you slam your hand in a door.
Trzeciak.
I don't know. I think it's Trzeciak. Anyway.
Trzeciak.
Yeah. So, according to him, visitors at the cemetery may experience full-bodied apparitions. He says that the faces of the spirits can't be seen and are blurred, but... He also says that the fact that those individuals involved in the crash were so badly burned, it likely makes this fact a small mercy, because who really wants to see that?
Truth.
Trzeciak also claims that there's sometimes a strong odor of burning fuel at the location. Again, very interesting that these experiences would be at the cemetery and not at the actual crash site.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before I peace out... I also kind of wanted to put into perspective another terrible circus accident. It happened on July 6th of 1944. There were between 167 and 169 people killed, 700 plus non-fatal injuries, so it was kind of a big deal. And this is the Hartford Circus Fire. occurred in Hartford, Connecticut. It was one of the worst fire disasters in the history of the United States. The fire occurred during an afternoon performance of the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus that was attended by between 6,000 to 8,000 people. Apparently 20 minutes into the show, a fire broke out. The tents at that time were coated so that they would be waterproof. Unfortunately, they were coated with paraffin and gasoline.
Oh, fuck.
So people were essentially sitting in a giant fucking candle.
Yeah, that's bad.
And so when the fire happened, everybody, of course, was rushing for the door, and there was, like, paraffin dripping down, and it was, like, a big fucking thing. And one of the most iconic images of that event is a photo of just the big top that is just completely decimated. You can see a little bit of the bleachers, but that's about it. And there are people going around, you know, trying to, like, help people and whatever. And there's a clown with a bucket of water. And it's the most...
ironic?
It's the most ironic. Because what are you going to do... with your one fucking bucket of water on a fucking paraffin and gasoline-soaked tent? It also... I mean, I think it really channels the just what the... like,
what do you do? What do you do? You'd want to do something.
You want to help, but what... I mean, what can you do?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, one bucket of water is not going to help, but... I mean,
other people just, don't have a bucket.
It was just pandemonium. You know, people were running everywhere trying to escape, and people were losing loved ones. And the band apparently started playing Stars and Stripes Forever, which I guess is a signal in the circus for shit is hitting the fan. Apparently. I don't know. So they started to play Stars and Stripes Forever, and everybody started to evacuate. So I don't know for sure if somebody actually started the fire. Or if somebody kicked something over and it started the fire. But, yeah, so there was a huge loss of life there. And, I mean, I'm sure that there have been circus people killed while they were performing acrobatics and whatever. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that these are not isolated events.
Damn. Yep. It is very interesting that it was not at the site where the accident actually happened. And it was rather at the site. That...
Mm-hmm.
You just think, for me, that makes you think, like, of just all the grief of the living people.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like possibly had more of an influence on it.
Right.
Because that's where they would have been doing their mourning.
And, I mean, it's over 40 miles away.
That's a bit of a job.
You know? I mean, it's a bit of a hike, so... I don't know. But apparently they're getting really good EVPs there. There are a bunch of videos on YouTube of people doing spirit sessions with, like, spirit boxes and stuff like that on YouTube. You can watch those. Those are all free to, you know, binge to your heart's content. There's also a very interesting documentary series from PBS on Netflix right now. It is simply called The Circus. And it chronicles the beginnings of the circus and P.T. Barnum and how he got his start. And how the circus as we know it today got created, got started. Some interesting and some cool stuff.
That is. It's always interesting to hear about history.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, go to your local antique stores and see what you can save of the circus. All right. So that is it for us this week. Thank you all so much for listening. We really appreciate you. We appreciate all of your comments and your constructive criticism. We will continue to improve.
Give us all the feedback. We want all of it. I mean, be nice.
Right. But, I mean, all the feedback has been polite.
Yeah, so. I feel like if you're like, tell us everything, then someone like will listen for the first time and be like, hey.
Well. All right, guys. So until next time, take care.
Hang cool, teddy bear.
And as always, stay spooky.
We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is theidentitypodcast@gmail.com. You can also connect with us on Facebook at The Identity Podcast or on Twitter and Instagram at Identity Pod. Again, that's ODDENTITYPOD.